This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Since this is the time of Passover and Easter, we're devoting today's show to a fascinating story about religion and music. A new CD features the songs of Ecstasy and Devotion, composed by the Italian nun Lucrezia Vizzana. The songs were first published in 1623 and are recorded in their entirety for the first time. Vizzana lived in a convent in Bologna from the age of 8 in 1598 to her death in 1662. The church had tightened its controls on the lives of nuns, making it difficult for nuns to study music. Vizzana was the only nun in Bologna to have her compositions published. Later we'll talk with one of the singers on the new CD. First we'll hear from Craig Monson, the historian who rediscovered Vizzana's music. He's the author of Disembodied Voices, about the music and culture in Vizzana's convent, and he's a professor of music at Washington University in St. Louis. Let's start with the opening track of the new CD, Lucrezia Vizzana. Set the stage for us a little bit. Lucrezia Vizzana was a nun in a convent. What was the role of music in the convent that she lived in the 17th century?
The official role of music was to adorn the services. For the nuns, their primary job in life was effectively to sing the services, what they called the Opus Dei. During the course of the day, they would sing 6 or 8 services spread out every 2 hours. The thing is, she goes one step further and provides rather more elaborate music that was designed not simply to adorn the service, but also to highlight the musical capabilities of the nuns within this convent, which in the city of Bologna was particularly known for its musically talented women.
Lucrezia Vizzana lived her life in a convent. Do you think that she could have had any kind of musical life outside of the convent? Were women in Italy during her lifetime allowed to perform or publish their music?
Well, there were possibilities, but it was an interesting sort of situation where public performance was frowned upon, particularly for women of the upper classes. To perform on the stage was, I suppose one could say, 1 or 2 steps away from prostitution in a way, that sort of public display. So to have a respectable career as a woman musician, the convent was the primary open venue for composers, women composers.
One of the really astounding things about this period, I think you say in 1631, 13.8% of the female population in Bologna lived in convents, and the percentage was even higher in the upper classes. That's really an extraordinarily high number.
Right. I mean, the way things seemed to work, you didn't want to squander the family patrimony by providing large dowries for a number of daughters. So the customary thing was often to marry one daughter off with a decent-sized dowry and make a useful family connection, but the others often were all sent to convents. And it's quite usual to find of 6 daughters, 5 will be sprinkled about amongst the convents in a city. This was so common that the church hierarchy had a decree that said that no more than 2 daughters from one family could be put in a single convent, lest that family create a power block within the institution.
So obviously these aren't women who were there because they felt called. I'm sure some of them felt called, but I'm sure a lot of them didn't, but they were stuck there and had no choice.
Well, basically, yeah. Some of them did have religious vocations, but for many of them, this might not have been the option they would have chosen. But on the other hand, they often didn't know other options. Lucrezia Vizzana, for example, went to the convent when she was 8 years old, before she really had experienced much in the world. Also, there were three of her aunts already in the convent who presumably took her in, brought her up, doted upon her. So in fact, she might have done better in the convent than she would have done had she been in the outside world.
Why was Vizzana sent to a convent at the age of 8 back in 1598?
Well, her mother had died shortly before, and often it was not considered safe for young women to remain unchaperoned in the house with their father and their brothers. It happens that her father remarried shortly afterwards, and that may have also had an effect.
Now, this was a convent that was known for its music. Was there music training that she was exposed to when she got to the nunnery, to the convent?
Well, it happens that one of her mother's three sisters, who were all nuns at Santa Cristina, was the convent organist, Camilla Bombacci. So she probably received her initial instruction from her aunt. Interestingly enough, because of her talents, however, the nuns secretly arranged for music lessons with the organist of San Petronio, Ottavio Vernizzi. And of course, this flew in the face of the restrictions imposed by the church hierarchy. Nevertheless, the nuns went ahead and did it. Obviously, once the church hierarchy found out about this during the investigation of 1623, they promptly put a stop to it.
Was the problem that this instructor was a man? This organist was a man?
Oh, yes, uh-huh. Yes.
What were the church's regulations about music? What could be sung? When it could be sung?
Well, for nuns, it was appropriate for them to sing Gregorian chant, and if the church authorities had their way, that was all they would sing. But of course, the nuns tended to aspire to more elaborate music, to polyphony. The regulations tend to vary from city to city. In Bologna, the bishop said that they could sing with one solo voice to the organ, and they were supposed to be limited to that combination.
Was harmony considered dangerous?
Well, I think it was the idea that one voice and organ provided a very austere medium. And again, the bishop was probably thinking a Gregorian chant supported by the organ in harmony. If you have four voices, if you have strings and winds, it becomes much more of a show, much more alluring to the outside population and so forth.
Let's pause here and listen to some of the music composed by Lucrezia Vizzana. I'd like you to choose something from the new CD of her music and tell us why you've chosen this.
Well, it might be interesting to listen to O Invictissima Christi Martyr, partly because this is a motet that's addressed to Saint Christina, the patron saint of the convent, so presumably this motet would have been heard every year on the matronal festival of the convent, which was the major musical event of the year. It's also interesting because it plays upon some of the musical paradigms that are associated with convents. One of the aspects one often finds emphasized is the idea of echo. And here, this is a piece for two sopranos who presumably would have been performing from behind grilled windows up near the vaults of the church where they were invisible and these voices were simply emanating from behind the walls. And Vizzana plays on the idea of echo. The motet begins with one voice singing alone, and then at a certain point, the second voice creeps in, echoing the first voice, and it's when they first begin to call upon the saint. And for a moment, you're not sure whether this is still one voice or two. The other thing that's interesting is the emphasis on music. The motet ends, "That we may sing," at which point the two solo voices take off with elaborate vocal pyrotechnics, displaying their ability to do elaborate runs and ornaments and so forth. So it very self-consciously points out the sort of musical talents for which the convent and indeed the composer were probably known.
Okay, this is the music of Lucrezia Vizzana, performed by a group called Musica Secreta.
Christina.
Music from the CD Lucrezia Vezzana, Songs of Ecstasy and Devotion from a 17th century Italian convent, performed by Musica Secreta. And my guest is Craig Monson, who has written a book called Disembodied Voices, Music and Culture in an Early Modern Italian Convent. He writes about Lucrezia Vezzana in this book. I was really struck by the image before we heard this track that you described to us of people from outside the convent hearing these beautiful voices hidden within the walls of the convent. Did the nuns actually emerge in any way and perform in such a way so that outsiders could see and hear them?
Well, they could be heard, but to see them was one of the strongest prohibitions. In Bologna, for example, in a convent such as Santa Cristina, there were hardly any openings in the walls where the public might catch a glimpse of the nuns. The only spot where they were regularly visible was in the so-called parlatorios, or parlors, where their families could come visit them. Those were rather like the visiting rooms in a modern prison. There was a room on each side of a wall that had barred windows joining the two rooms, and they could sit on each side and converse. In the chapel itself, however, they were strictly separated. A convent church, in fact, involves an outer church, which is open to the public, and an inner church, which is the area to which the nuns are confined. Those two chapels are joined usually by a wall behind the high altar, and that wall is pierced only by a window above the altar high enough so that the public in the outer church can't view the nuns, but low enough that when the priest celebrating Mass in the outer church elevates the host during the Mass, the host will become visible to the nuns in their inner chapel. And that one window was the main link between the two. Now, in chapels such as the chapel at Santa Cristina, where music was important, there would also be grilled windows in the organ lofts or the choir lofts where the nuns would be singing so that the sound would carry into the outer chapel. But the important thing was that the nuns never be visible. So the sound simply seems to come out of nowhere from up in the vaults of the church. And often one hears talk of voices as if of angels, angelic voices, celestial sirens, and that sort of general vocabulary.
My guest is music historian Craig Monson. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Craig Monson, the author of Disembodied Voices, about the 17th century nun and composer Lucrezia Vezzana and the music in her convent. Lucrezia Vezzana obviously had this gift for writing music. I'm wondering if you know if she was frustrated by the fact that she was confined behind the walls of the convent. And again, it's not like she had a calling for this. She was placed there as an 8-year-old. She never had a choice.
Well, of course, it's very hard to know because we have very few of her own words, and the words we have, she obviously very carefully considered because they are always directed towards church authorities, and most of them actually come out of the context when the convent was investigated for supposed infractions. So she doesn't tell us much. But one imagines that since she went there so young, it was basically the only life she knew, and she was treated as a special person because of her talents. One thing that is interesting, of course, is that after the publication of this collection in 1623, we hear no more of her as a composer. For the last 40 years of her life, she published nothing else, and it's not clear if she, in fact, composed further.
Now, there were complaints about her music, weren't there?
Well, there were complaints about music making in the convent. Mm-hmm. She herself seems to have been rather discreet. I mean, she's very circumspect about what she actually says to church authorities. It happens that her collection appeared at exactly the time when the church authorities came to the convent and undertook a major investigation of the nuns, because one nun had written to Rome secretly claiming that the convent was a hotbed of immorality and that the nuns were ignoring their sacred vows and so forth. And therefore, the bishop sent a commission to the convent to interview every nun from the oldest to the youngest in the manner of an inquisition, as it were. And what had started the investigation, in fact, was the suggestion by the disgruntled nun that it had all started because of music.
And music was, what, this doorway into more secular and carnal feeling?
Presumably. As it happens, it would, in this case, it had a lot to do with rivalry between two other talented musical nuns who both wanted to have control of the chapel choir. And essentially, a power play was worked out, and the nun who lost this little struggle was the one who then wrote to Rome.
Now, Lucrezia Vezzana is said to have gone mad. What do you know about that?
Well, she was weak throughout her life, as early as the 1620s, when the convent was investigated by the church hierarchy. She admitted that she didn't get up for early morning prayers because she was unwell. In the convent necrology, it also points out that she was increasingly afflicted with severe illness, which, quote, she bore with virile fortitude, I think they say. It's the father confessor that points out that because of this investigation and the really extraordinary battles that took place as a result of it, her weak constitution couldn't stand up to the stress, and eventually she was driven mad by all this political unrest within the convent walls, so that whenever she heard the church bells ring, she would flail out madly, I think he says.
Tell us more about what the investigation was about.
Well, this one nun had written to Rome suggesting that the convent had become a place of laxity and immorality. The local bishop used this as an excuse to try to wrest control of the convent away from the Camaldolese order to which they were subject, so that he wanted the convent to be under his control. Of course, the nuns and their superiors resisted this power of play, and they resisted it extraordinarily strongly, to the extent that they took vows not to submit to the bishop. They chased away his emissaries. At one point, he sent the police to wall up any windows and doorways to the convent, to cut them off effectively from the outside world. The nuns knocked down the wall that the police had put up overnight, and then when the police came back the next day, the nuns went up on the roof and pelted them with bricks and stones, while Lucrezia Vezzana's sister went up to a high window and exhorted the crowd to come to the aid of the convent. So it's a sort of extraordinary state of play that is unlike anything one associates with nuns.
Do you love the music?
I love the music a lot. I don't think it's great music. I tend to react to music of this period by asking myself, well, does this merit a second hearing or a third hearing? And I think this music is convincing in its own terms and bears repeated hearings. Not all the music of this period does. Other music, the music of Claudio Monteverdi, for example, is obviously far greater. But I think Lucrezia Vezzana's music is convincing on its own terms and does the job for which she created it, i.e. to adorn the services of the house and also to call attention to the nuns within the walls. I think it does that job quite convincingly.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I appreciate your interest.
Craig Munson is the author of Disembodied Voices, about Lucrezia Vizzana and her convent. He's a professor of music at Washington University in St. Louis. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.